Off we go. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Minutes of the 20th of May have been circulated and published. Are the committee happy for me to sign them as a true and fair view?
Chairman.
Have we any apologies?
We do, Chairman. Apologies from Councillor Leeson, who is substituted tonight by Councillor Brendan McEwen, and Councillor McNaughton, I understand, has been substituted by Councillor Thorley.
Yeah.
Thank you. Item number three, then, the officers' reports. Just give a second for Angela to get her copy of the agenda. And I'm just hanging on till you sort it out, Angela.
I'm so pleased.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You got your pen ready for action as well. Yeah. Right then, officers' reports, please.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'll take members through this first one. So this is the internal audit annual report for 24-25, and it's essentially the summary of all the work that we have done, and it includes the opinion that I'm required to give to the committee. Before I go into the detail of the annual report, I will draw members' attention to Appendix 1, which are the items that we've done and not presented to this committee before. So everything else, all of the other internal audit reports and follow-ups, will have been across the committee before. Appendix 1 starts on page 7 of the agenda. Are those reports that haven't been here. So we have a few partial assurances, so three partial assurances and one substantial assurance in some new work that we've done, and there are comments against each one of those. Over the page on to page 9 are the follow-ups that we've done, and if members can see, the first one of those is property management of rentals, which was limited assurance and is still limited assurance when we've done the follow-up. And then over the page, there's climate change, which was limited but has improved to partial, and then CDM compliance, which was partial and remains partial, but there have been some progress in implementing recommendations. I think from those things, probably the one I've drawn to members' attention is that property management and rentals audit, which we've done a follow-up and there was no progress in any of the recommendations that we made and remains limited, and it's just really for members to determine whether they are happy with that or whether there is the opportunity for you to ask officers to come to.
Angela.
Thanks, Chairman. That was something that I actually picked up on, because it's something I have noticed over the years, without going back over many years. If you in actual fact walk around the town centre, if you ever looked above the shop fronts to some of the windows up the stairs, they're absolutely appalling. You know, apart from the windows being absolutely filthy, the state of the window frames is disgraceful as well. And I've often thought to myself, you know, it might be that the shopkeepers or the shop owners are having window cleaners, etc., to clean their windows and make sure that everything looks good. But as soon as you get above that, you don't give a toss in care. And I think it is something that, you know, I'm pleased that you've actually mentioned it here, because I mentioned it many, many years ago, not necessarily in this committee, but at another committee, where I think, you know, as I say, just in walking around the town, if you look above the shops at some of the properties above there, they're in a very bad state of disrepair.
If I may say, Chair, our report focused mainly on the commercial properties that, or solely on the commercial properties that we are responsible for, that we manage.
But why? You know, why? Because surely those who, those properties that we do not own, those owners still ought to be responsible for the upkeep of the properties up the stairs.
If I may, Chair, they should be responsible, and there should be somebody there, and that, but it's not this council's remit to make sure that they are always following that. There may be other avenues when we've had the economic regeneration side to be working with them to encourage them, but we don't have the power that I have to mandate some of those things unless they become dangerous structures. But in terms of this that we're flagging up, it's about the management of our own assets where we've raised these concerns.
Are you happy with that, Angela?
No, I still feel, you know, that we as a council shouldn't just sit back and say, you know, that's all right, that's nothing to do with us. Because it is to do with us, it's our town centre. And I'm surprised, you know, I don't know what avenue it should be. You know, maybe somebody could come up with an idea, and rather than just say, well, it's nothing to do with us, it's not our fault.
Well, I think what we're hearing is that there are perhaps other routes available to us. But not through this route, because this route is purely about our own stock of housing and corporate assets. So that we are in charge of,
yeah.
That
so
we are can ask for.
We've only looked at our stock then, we haven't looked up above.
We haven't looked at other people's stock to try and come up with a standard that we would wish our town centre to be holden to. Yeah. But it is quite a good point, and perhaps we ought to try and find a method of doing it.
Can I say maybe you should start looking up above there as well?
Yeah, yeah. Perhaps you could ask a cabinet member how they could go about it.
Well, you tell me who's in charge of the property, and I'll have a look at them.
Oh, we'll talk to Ralph, he's good at these things.
So shall I pass that over to the cabinet, ask the committee to pass it to the cabinet member?
Yeah.
Can you look at that? No point spending all these millions.
Yeah. If I could add that we have looked at this one and noted that in spite of prompting, it started as limited and it's finished as limited. Mm-hmm. And as you'll see later on in the report, it's the only one that is. And we are perhaps having the responsible person coming to tell us how they're getting on with addressing these issues. Mm-hmm. At our next meeting.
Our next meeting, that's wonderful. We'll make a point to you here.
Yeah.
Right, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of that summary, then, that's just bringing new information to members' attention. Go over a couple of pages, really, to the annual report. The first few pages are some introduction and some background into why we're doing what the annual report is there for. As I mentioned in the training earlier, one of the key things that we do is this annual report to give you that summary and for you to place assurance on, to give you an opinion so you can use that as assurance for the annual government statement. To enable you to place reliance on internal audit, the first section of the report, section 1, particularly 1.7 onwards, talks about a review of internal audit that I have done. It also makes reference to the external quality assessment that we had a few years ago, and we have to have every 5 years, and we are, to give members reassurance that we are, you know, in conformance with the required standards, and our last external quality assurance gave us a good review. So hopefully you can place reliance on the contents of this report when determining the annual government statement and considering that later.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, have we got page 15 yet?
I was just coming down to that.
Yeah, I was looking at page 15, 1.6,
yeah.
The internal audit and satisfaction survey. Only 6 heads of service responded, which equates to 16% of the total. Is that disappointing?
It is, if I may, through you, Chair. I would have liked a higher response, and we did have a higher response last year. Unfortunately, that was lower than the year before. So we did get probably about 40% the first year. It dropped last year and it dropped again this year. whilst I'm pleased that it's showing a good level of school, and that has gone back up where it had dropped last year, again, it's not necessarily a high sample. What I will say, and Judith will possibly back this up as well, is I'd be more concerned if I was getting lots of people knocking on my door, lots of people complaining to Judith. So the absence of comment is indicative of, as well, that if people were strongly feeling that we weren't an effective service, or we weren't doing things that we liked or that they liked, they would be vocal and tell us. And we don't get a lot of those complaints. And I suppose as internal audit, we also do have that, where we do get some negative comments. It's normally because we're asking difficult questions or raising difficult points that managers don't want to see. So it's more of that context that we do see.
Ralph, I think you first.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, in paragraph 1.16, I noticed six responses were received, and it then goes on to say this is a slight fall on the 16 responses. It's more than a slight fall, it's quite a big percentage decrease. What worries me is if you've got that, and you've got this significant fall, whether the information you're getting is representative. I mean, if you don't get enough responses, it can affect the representative nature of the actual responses you're receiving, the quality of the responses. I don't see why we don't make this compulsory. I mean, it should be mandatory for every head of service to have to do this. And there's no messing about with it. Just do it and get on with it. And also, I would hope that if we're asking, for example, how satisfied are you with this, and so there's not just a yes or no answer there, but why are you satisfied? Give some reasons for any answer you're giving, because otherwise it's very easy to just tick a box or something. Mm. But they need to think about it, and they need to do it so that we actually get the data.
I don't know how you're going to do that, but you need more than six friends next year.
I mean, we can work, Chair, to try and improve that and talk to heads. It is always one of those things. We did used to send a survey out after every audit, and we saw a big drop in that, because there's lots of other people, IT and others, when you have a help desk call, you may get a survey, and they're starting to be overloaded. We decided a few years ago that we would just do one in a year and send it to everybody.
Yeah.
But it has seen a drop in numbers since the first year, where we had a high response. I think because it was a different way,
yeah,
we did get a better response. But certainly we'll see what we can do next year to get a higher response.
And just for clarity then, 16% represents 6 out of 36. Mm-hmm. 30 people did not respond.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of who did respond, is there a correlation between people who interacted with internal audit this year and the people who did respond?
I think everybody who responded this year, because one of the questions that isn't in this summary, but we do ask them whether they've had any interaction with us and what types of interaction that is. And I think everybody who did respond this year had audit reports from us.
So my follow-up to that is, of the 36 managers, how many people had an internal audit interaction?
Every head of service would have had an audit in their area, so that would be, what is it, 10 heads of service, seven heads and a couple of directors who would have seen information, and then there's the remainder of the managers, so probably with what we've got, there's not too many who wouldn't have had some interaction.
I just wondered if it was a smaller subset, and actually we were catching all the people who had a direct interaction, but clearly not. So.
Yeah, because we also count interactions if they phone us for advice, or we do things outside of audit reports. So
right.
We do have contact with people we may not have audited in the year as well.
Having said that, Mr. Chairman, members are notoriously bad at responding to...
Well, this is true. This is true, but... Maybe we're on a name vote next year then.
But if I may, Chair, just to quickly go through the rest of it, I think the key points feed up to paragraph 2.14 on page 17, which is, overall, I'm giving limited assurance for the section. Whilst members can see from the table at 3.2, we haven't actually given any limited assurances in the year, which is an improvement on previous years. We still have got some follow-up that we haven't followed up from previous limited assurances. And as we've seen in the one that we've just been talking about, we've got at least one limited assurance where we have followed it up and they haven't made the progress to get that assurance changed. So I did get a question from the chief exec, was I comfortable with that on that basis of no limited in the year? But I think with the wider information of where we're at, I am comfortable that we are still giving limited assurance. We haven't put enough things in place to move that up a level. We are working in the right direction though for Stafford Borough, and there is that progress. It's just not tipped the bar yet. In terms of the work that we did, there is that summary, as I say, at 3.2. We did 15 audit reports. As members can see from the performance table at 4.1, that is a slightly less percentage of audits than we would have liked against our plan work, so we only achieved 63% against the target of 90% of the plan. But looking back up to paragraphs 3.4 and 3.5 really gives the explanation for that. We did 30 follow-ups across 22 audit areas, following up 119 recommendations. Now that is a lot more follow-ups than we would have normally done in previous years, and that's indicative of the assurances and the reports that we did in previous years. So we've spent more time in following up audits that we've done, and it's meant we haven't quite been able to get as many done as we would have hoped. But it's still all useful information to follow up on those and focus on those areas. So hopefully, whilst it's not the performance we would have hoped at against the plan, we haven't wasted time and we've used that time to move things forward. I think the only other bit of that I'd probably pull members' attention to is this lack of progress that I've spoken about some key areas around property management and compliance, that lease management, tree management and the use of agency staff. So those are the audit areas where the areas we've looked at in the past where we're still saying there is that limited assurance and we haven't moved things on. So that's really why. I don't really want to draw too much attention out of that wider work, but there is a table at a few appendices setting out the work and the assurances we've given for each audit and each follow-up in the year, and there's a table at the end which is the result of the review of internal audit, just our improvement plan of where we as a service have got some actions to address. There's a few areas in that grayed out where we have completed the actions from previous years and then just some new actions. So I'm quite happy to take questions from members, Chair, if there are any.
Yep. Shall I just go through the pages then? We're up to page
19. I'm rather disappointed in this report, in that there seems to be an awful lot of partials and limiteds. I'd have liked to have seen a lot more substantials. I'm worried about the amount of stuff which doesn't seem to be being done, and quite important that it is. And I noticed the committee is saying that you're inviting somebody along, an officer along next meeting to sort out one or two issues in that department. Frankly, there are others here. I'm concerned that on page 19, at least at paragraph 3.8, for example, which is one of my concerns, this whole bunch of bullet points, which I think are pretty worrying. I think there's been lack of progress in all sorts of other ways there. I think that the internal audit has been very charitable and very generous. I'd be jumping up and down, frankly. And I would remind the committee that you can call in heads of service or whatever to this committee to hold them to account and hold their feet to the fire.
Just for you, Chair, I've got 3.8 highlighted as well. And a bit worrying that this meant that contracts were not always market tested fully, or work was issued outside of contractual agreements or on contracts that had expired. So there does seem some sort of lack of overall management in some fairly key areas.
I think what you've got here, if I may speak on your behalf, is these are things that were missing, not in general, but occasionally. And what you need to do is perhaps look through Appendix 2 to see for each of the areas what is happening and where it's got to. What you're seeing is it's not perfect. This has happened occasionally, and you will see how occasionally by looking at the instances as you go through on pages 26 and 27 and 28. So if you'd like to pick up on any of those, perhaps I think we have not done ourselves a service by putting those bullet points in as the areas where things might have gone wrong. It looks as if everything under that bullet point has gone wrong, rather than, as you and I know, it's occasionally it's gone wrong under those areas.
If I may, Jeff, they are things that we have found and we've seen through the work that we have done. They're not necessarily all fundamental failures, but they are indicative of some of the things that we see. So these are probably the higher level things that have cropped up in audits that we've done, and some of these we have seen in previous years as well, cropping up. It's things that we are trying to address in some areas corporately through processes, but it comes down to things like the training and rolling things out, as well as making sure we've got records across some of these things.
The way you've projected yourself, and I highlighted that area as well, like on the bullet point 3 under 3.8, poor project management processes, including some missing or poor quality project risk registers. Now that sounds fairly disastrous, given the sort of projects we've got going on. Whereas I think you're saying you have spotted the occasional poor project management during the process, not that it's endemic within the whole of them.
Because of the work we've done, I can't comment on every project that we've got ongoing, because we won't have looked at all of the projects. But the projects that we have looked at, we have found those issues, including some of the major projects that we have got ongoing, that we have spotted problems with risk management, with the risk registers that have been prepared and presented. We have made recommendations, and for some of those they have then done work. But what we're saying is that the standard process hasn't led to a high quality risk register in the first instance.
So the committee is quite right then to pick up on that, in that it is an underlying trend within our council that these risks are taking place. And as we know, on some of these very sizable projects, that could be very costly.
I mean, just as a case in point on that one, Appendix 1C on page 24, we actually have given partial assurance to the regeneration projects, and that will be one of the factors that has led to that assurance, that the risk management arrangements weren't, when we reviewed it, weren't where we would like them to be. It's not to say that they're not necessarily haven't improved, because we haven't always followed them up. And I do know for that risk management, we have done a lot of work with them to improve the risk registers that they have and the information that they have. So a case in point is where things are contracted out or we've got consultants, there's been a tendency in the past to say, it's okay, the contractors are writing the risk registers for us. And we don't necessarily have our own risk register of things that could go wrong with that project. It's not to say the contractor's risk register is bad, but a contractor won't put a risk on, for example, of the contractor failing or falling over. They won't put that on their risk register, but for the council that is a big risk. Mm-hmm. So that's a case in point. It's to recognise that these things might happen and what we can do. It's not necessarily that the contractor will fail, but we hadn't captured that as a risk for consideration by members of the project board.
Right. Would members like to hear from the Section 151 officer how he views that?
So just in terms of the formatting of 3.8, because of the way it's written, unlike when we see the risks against the sections in the overviews that we get, this collates together a lot of different risks that, to my understanding, cut across a number of different areas. I think in terms of like in terms of holding or bring somebody into question over it, I think the question would be who would be the appropriate person if these are occurring in multiple different places. The question in my head is the right process in place in that case? And then if the correct process is in place, then it is an implementation and training and all those types of things. So there's a kind of...
Thank you very much. This, yes, it has picked out some areas of concern for us, and we are looking into them. Some have seen mitigation recently. We have had some work done on them. It isn't great that they've turned out as they have, but it shows our systems and processes are working in terms of our coherence and our checks. We've managed to pick them up. We haven't picked them up, that would be worse. But it is an area that we do need to address. So we need to put that into that context, essentially, around our processes. Mm. So internal audit's done their bit. They've identified them. Great, in terms of that process. Yeah, we shouldn't have got to where we've got to. We'll address that now.
But I think, through you, Chair, it's better that they're flagged up rather than covered up. Yeah. So in that respect, it's a good report.
Yeah. Judy.
I just wanted to add to that as well, that most of the issues that are in there are actually, if you look back, look forward to the next item on the agenda, which is the BFM progress update, some of these were issues that we identified a couple of years ago. But we recognise that, you know, we've spent time fixing certain things. Some of these are the ones we haven't quite got to yet. Mm. So they don't concern me. They're not new issues. They are issues we are aware of, and we are working to fix them.
Committee happy with that? Okay. Thank you very much. Moving on then. Page 20. And 21. 22 on just explanations. 23. 24. There are a number of issues on 24. I don't know if you'd like to comment on the number of high, medium recommendations that are currently outstanding.
In terms of those are the recommendations from that year. As I referred to, there were some audits that we haven't necessarily picked up or followed up in the year. So those are all new recommendations that have been made.
Yep.
There will be progress made against some of those in follow-ups. We tend to do those 6 months later. So yep. Some of those numbers may have dropped at follow-up. Some may still be on there, but we may have other audits that are out there. But I think and it's not always indicative, there may be an audit with one recommendation, and that's quite a big one, and an audit with 8 medium recommendations that are of less importance but are indicative of a wider span.
Could you remind the committee of how many follow-ups you did last year?
We did 30 follow-ups over 22 areas.
Yeah.
And 119 recommendations.
Yeah. So that is all part of the process.
That's all part of the process, yeah. And that all feeds into the opinion. So, yeah at the follow-ups we did in the year, we see about 50, just under 53% of the recommendations implemented. Yeah. So we are implementing just over half. Another sort of another percentage that were in progress at the time. Another quite high percentage. And then a lower number that have got no progress, as we've seen an odd audit where nothing has happened.
Okay, then moving on to Appendix 2. There's our friend Property Management at the top. Yeah?
Looking through a lot of these lists, there are very few of them that are where the items identified are not implemented. There is the one that we've already discussed in terms of property management and rentals, but there is CDM compliance and CDM compliance second.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, is that the same recommendation that's not implemented and we're seeing it twice?
Yeah. Yeah, so what you would see, Chair, through your Chair, is the CDM compliance was the first time we followed it up, and then the second follow-up is we've gone back to that and we've seen that, so it would be a recommendation not implemented in both of those.
And it's also the same area I wanted to highlight as the property management, where so one area has eight, but one of those eight twice recommendations not implemented. So could we add CDM compliance to the conversation we have with regards to property management and rentals? And as a follow-up to that, in order that we can be kind of slightly better informed for that conversation when the head of service comes in, could we see more detail than we currently get just on that specific area?
We can. I think there's one thing we just need to clarify. That isn't eight outstanding recommendations. It was five that were from the first audit, and then two have been implemented, so it's reduced to three.
No, there's seven not implemented against property management.
Sorry, right, okay.
And then there's one that's in there twice against CBM. That's my understanding of it.
If I can, on that one, I can give members more, and I can't remember whether we brought this to the last meeting or whether it was earlier, because it is something that is a fairly recent follow-up. The one area, we've made a lot of progress on the CBM compliance, and we've trained a lot of managers and put a lot of processes in place. The one outstanding recommendation for that, I do know, is that we haven't got a policy for CDM arrangements at the council. So it's that policy and high level document that is the one recommendation that is outstanding. So we have put a lot of procedures in place for making sure we're compliant, and we have trained a lot of managers to understand CDM, which is what we found when we did the first audit. There was a lack of understanding, a lack of knowledge, a lack of skill to be able to make sure we were doing the right things. The only bit that's outstanding now is actually pulling that all together into a documented policy. So it isn't as bad as it sounds, and it is probably the one bit that will take longer. So we've actually put the arrangements on the ground in place. We just haven't documented it into a policy. So hopefully that will put members' minds at rest on that one.
In terms of the broader point, particularly around the housing and corporate assets and the property management and rentals, is it possible to get some ahead of time to get some more detailed information to give us a better understanding before we?
Yeah, we can certainly, Chair, do a short note on what the position is. Even if it's resending the summary that we gave you when it was on the agenda item, just so you've got that time rather than looking back.
Yeah, we have talked about the simplistic management style. What's wrong? What are you doing about it? When's it going to be right? Type of discussion when the individual manages to get to us to tell us how they're getting on. Any other issues want to be raised from page 26, 27 and 28? And then you've got an improvement plan on appendix 3. Do you want to talk through any of that? Most of which is completed.
The grey out areas are the ones from previous action plans that we have completed now. The areas are around seeking views of audit committee chairs in my performance development review, and working for assurance mapping, which is something in the new standards that's been bumped up there. It is quite a time consuming exercise, but it is something we're going to try and flesh out in there. As I say, most of the rest of the actions are there. We will have to, because we've got new standards, we'll have to update things like the audit charter and the audit manual. The charter will come before committee, and we have to write a strategy this year under the new standards as well, which we haven't had to do, so that will come to the committee, hopefully at your September meeting to approve.
Okay. So that's the end of the internal audit annual report. We're asked to note it.
Noted.
Thank you. So I will sign that as noted.
Thank you.
Do I sign it?
No.
No, I don't sign it. You just note that we've noted it. Yeah, okay.
Just
minute it that we've noted. Right then, agenda item 3B, which is the resources portfolio. Report from Judith.
Thank you, Chair. So this is the end of year performance for the Value for Money Improvement Plan. I'm going to skip through the coming board and take you to the appendix, which starts on page 35. And you'll see from the table on there that of the 37 actions that were planned to be completed in the last 12 months, 28 of those have been completed in full or work is well underway. And we've had some slippage around 6 of them, and then 3 of them are no longer applicable. The main sort of success during the year really has to be noted around the delivery of the outstanding accounts and that we're now up to date on those. In terms of the things that have slipped, I'll take you through those one by one. The first one of those is on page 40. And that was the update of the IT security policy, which at the point of providing reports, so at the year end, that had slipped slightly, and we were predicting it would go to leadership team for approval in May. I can confirm that has now been completed, so that will want to turn to a positive when we get the next update. Moving on to the next page, the review of hybrid working, that too had slipped. We've got the draft report, but it wasn't moving because of other priorities having to take precedence. But again, I can advise the committee that will be moving forward now. Early quarter two, that's due to go to leadership team in July. The lessons learned exercise around the implementation of the finance system, despite our best intentions, we did have to concede that really the priority for the finance team in quarter one was to close down the accounts, which they've been working really hard on. So we're rescheduling that for later in the year. On to page 44, the two on there that have slipped are the contracts register, which we were hoping we would pick up in quarter one, but I can report to the committee now that will now be quarter two, and the work around culture and values. We've kind of put a bit of a pause on that while we take stock in terms of local government reorganisation. We probably will do something, but it probably won't be to the full extent we'd originally anticipated. But say we're still waiting for the picture to settle a little around local government reorganisation. Moving on to the next page, 45, we have committed to undertake a review of all the projects and their governance arrangements. We've not had the capacity to do that as yet, but we do intend to do that piece of work. I think that's all the items that we're due in 2024-25. So I said, generally speaking, we've made a lot of progress, but there is still work to be done. There are obviously further actions that will be due in 2025-26 as well. The one thing I do want to mention to the committee, this is the last time you'll be seeing the report in that format. We are now going to strip out all of the actions that have been completed. Only the ones that have been completed in full, so anything that's got a star will come out. And then we'll move forward with a slimmed down plan, and it's going to be rebadged back to the Governance Improvement Plan. And actually, we picked that up as the last part of your agenda item, because the new version of it is now attached to that report. So, as I say, there is a complete trail of where things have moved. We're also moving back to reporting it by theme, because I think it'll be much easier for the committee to see where we're progressing against the themes rather than just against a timeline, really. We'll get it reported in both ways.
Yep.
Is it Hughes, number 33?
Oh, sorry.
Because you say a report will be prepared for Cabinet's consideration in Q1.
Oh, is that so on the local government reorganisation?
Yes. So,
right. Okay.
Do you know when or it's still.
It's certainly not been done in quarter one.
Yeah.
It's more likely to be quarter two now. I don't think we've quite made the progress to date on local government reorganisation. It's taken a little bit of time. I think we're going to hit a real curve of movement. But I think over the next few months we'll start to have a better idea of where we're at and then how that affects our other plans for transformation. So I estimate the report will come through with Cabinet probably later in quarter two.
So that takes us to the end of agenda item 3B. We're asked to note the progress.
I've got a question.
Oh, no, you've got another one.
On the appendix one, first quarter 25-26, there are the series of...
Could you give us a page?
46 to 49.
Oh, all the grayed out ones?
Yeah, it's all have to be done on quarter one, but it's not done, or it's in progress, or...
We haven't come to the end of quarter one yet. We've not reported progress on that. This is only reported progress up to the end of 24-25.
Okay.
So it takes you to the 31st of March this year.
Okay.
The next committee meeting, you will get a progress on where we're at with quarter one.
All right. So I don't understand why we don't have the meeting at the first day on the quarter two to have all that.
It takes us time to prepare the progress updates and get it through our cycle. But, so I know there's a bit of a time lag, which is where wherever I can, if I've got more current update, I will give you, certainly on the actions that have slipped from that quarter.
Okay.
But as I say, we haven't reached the quarter end yet, and I can't literally report it a week or two in. It takes time to collate that information from colleagues.
Okay, so we will have it at the end of quarter two.
It will be pretty much towards the end of course too, by the time you get to
somebody else wants to.
Well, it's just a question of organisation.
Okay, so we're asked to note the progress made. Am I happy to note that?
Yes.
Thank you. So minuted, we have noted it. Takes us on to item 3C, starting on page 52.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'll take members through this item. So this is the strategic risk register. Just for members' information, we have reviewed and reissued and updated the risk management process. As of the 1st of April, we have a more robust risk management process in place for the council. We have done a lot of work with managers to train them up on that process, and we've had a number of workshops with the leadership team specifically focused on identifying the strategic risks. So we've almost set aside what we had and started from scratch again to build it back up. There are a number of risks that are common with the risks that we previously had. There are some areas that are new that have appeared on there, and as members will see from the position of 30th of September, we have gone from 8 to 9 risks, but we've gone from 3 to 5 of those which are red risks, so at the highest risk score. So, but that's to put it into context. It's not that things have necessarily got worse. It's because we've got a more detailed process, and we've done a different process to identify the risk register that's actually opened up a whole new area of risks that we are now capturing. Really, I think the summary is giving you the overview, and that's on page 57 and over to page 58. So this lists all of the risks that were inherently red that we identified through those processes. As members can see that we have, when we look at the controls in place, we are able to bring a number of those down to an amber risk, but that's still above the corporate risk appetite of a yellow risk, so everything we're aiming to score below a 4. What we're proposing to do with this is to bring this to Cabinet and get their approval. At the moment we haven't had that Cabinet meeting, so this is it's unfortunate that the timings haven't worked right, but this is coming as a draft, but it has been through Cabinet briefing and the risks are pretty much, as we expect, will be approved. In terms of this committee, your main focus is on the actions that we've identified, that managers have identified for managing those risks, and ensuring that they are appropriate and they are moving on. Obviously, because it's the first time we've brought it, there is limited things to look back on to see how we have progressed, but as I say, where there may be risks that are common with what we had before, you might see that. moving forward, we will bring this summary to every committee, but the following page is the appendix 2, where we go into the detail and give you the actions. Because we've got more risks now, what we're proposing is to only bring members the quarterly updates on those that are remaining a red risk, so that members of this committee and members of cabinet can focus on that. But you will see that, still see that summary risk in full, that's on page 57 and 58. If risks do that are currently are amber go to red, we'll add those in, and vice versa. If things are improving and they drop, we will notify you of that drop and remove them from the risk. I'm not proposing to go through the appendix 2 page by page, but if members do want to go to page 59, because we've changed the format of how we're presenting it, I'm quite happy. I'll go through the first one that's on there. And this is a risk around health and safety arrangements for property. And we set out a short name so it's easier to refer to it. The risk description is a longer, more detailed narrative on the risk. We set out the consequences of what may go wrong in relation to that risk. We link it to corporate objectives and the categories. We will then give a risk scoring, and as members can see on this one, it started off as a 4x4, it's dropped to a 4x3. We then put a target score in there, which is an 8. That is above the council's risk appetite, so where that is above a yellow, you should see a comment below in that target score box, and that sets out why we are putting it on that level, and why we don't think we can get it down to a 4 in the short term. We then give you some information on the controls and assurances that are in place relating to that risk, and then we have an action plan on how we are planning on bringing it down. So I will, I'm happy to take questions on any of those that we can do, Chair.
Would you like to ask a question?
Yeah, in the summary, the health and safety arrangements for properties is 4x3, 4x3, but in the detail it's 4x4, 4x3. For the summary on page 57.
Yes, you are right. Yes, yes. It may, I think, Chair, it may just be an error. I will double check that to see which one is right.
Which one's the error?
So I will double check that. The residual score will be right because that is where we are at. But it's still a red risk, which is something we do need to address. And I do need to look at that, yeah.
However, there is a difference between there being some mitigations in place and there being no mitigations in place for a red risk. So, like,
yeah,
having looked at the summary, it was, there are no mitigations in place because they're the same on both sides. But when you then look into the detail as to why that's the case, it does look as though there are mitigations in place because actually the inherent risk is lower, is much higher than...
Apologies for that, Chair. I will look at that and, if necessary, we'll send something through Jim to...
My other question on the same... item is there a link between the internal audit that we've already looked at previously and raised concerns over and this risk and its lack of mitigations or not being mitigated down to the council's risk?
There will be some that's linked in there. Obviously we've identified some issues in terms of property management and some of the areas that we're lacking will be the areas where we're saying we want to build controls in, and some of these controls may well be the same things that we have agreed actions with management to put those right. So there will be overlap, and particularly that's a good thing that to draw that attention, that actually if internal audit are saying something's bad and we've got a risk that we're saying everything is good, then that should be sparking something in the members' attention. So where we're saying it's bad in both, you can see that correlation. We've identified issues in the audit that controls aren't operating, therefore we wouldn't expect to see the controls in that risk being perfect and it being a very low score.
Thank you. going through then. Any other questions out to page 71, 73, 70, finishing on 76. So we can then come back to
page 52, Jack.
52, where we're asked to consider the progress made and note the draft strategic risk register. Are we all content to note the strategic risk register?
I think we are.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Takes us on to item 3D, which is slightly more important because the committee has to approve the annual governance statement and the governance improvement plan set out in Appendix 2. And you have to approve me to sign it. So. No, I'm asking you to tell me what to do here. So, starting on page 77 then.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So, this report sets out the annual review that we're obliged to undertake of all of our governance arrangements. Both the covering report and the first part of the statement set out how we conduct that review and what comprises our structure for that. The key things that I'll draw attention to are the ones that have already been on the agenda tonight. So, much of the information that you will see in here has come from either Stephen's annual audit report, from the strategic risk register, or it's come from discussions with leadership teams and the statutory officers. And they are separated out in as you go through the annual governance statement. So when you get to the end of it, you'll see the list of significant governance issues. And there shouldn't be any surprises on there to members. They're all either safety from the annual audit report, the strategic risk register, or from the existing value for money improvement plan that we've had, which actually did have its origins originally in our government statement from a couple of years ago. So the only thing that's new in there is we've added something that kind of picks up around Stephen's kind of generic comments in the annual audit report where things are slipping a little bit, and from a conversation that myself, Chris is the 151 officer, and Ian is the monitoring officer had, around a more general concern around compliance with our governance arrangements. So we've added a catch-all that we will undertake some training, do some reminders, do a lot of awareness raising around our governance framework to see if we can shift that level of compliance through a different route rather than it just coming through audit. We'll do something proactive as well. So that's the only new item that's in there. What then follows is your newly formatted governance improvement plan. So this is the one that will replace the old CFM plan. It's the one that's had stripped out all of the actions that have been completed. You'll see some of the little symbols in there. They're the actions that have carried over is work in progress, although slipped to them. So we've carried those forward, and then they've all gone back to the original theme. And that's what will now come forward to the committee on a quarterly basis to keep you updated with the progress we're making against those remaining actions. And what we're not going to do is duplicate on the risk register. So anything that's on the risk register, I've not included it again in the improvement plan unless it was already there, because you will actually pick up those actions through monitoring the risk register anyway. So we're trying to simplify things a little bit so you're not reading the same things two or three times over.
Have we any questions for Judith? The recommendation is that the committee approves the annual governance statement and that the committee approves the governance improvement plan set out in Appendix 2. Are you happy for me to sign that?
Yeah. I think given that we have discussed all of this already this evening, I'm very happy, Pete.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.
chapter 20.
Can you face the darkness? Much obliged. Thank you.
Yep. And that takes us right through to the end. And I think we've now can close the meeting. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.